I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, maybe Democrats were right all along. Democracy is in peril, except this time they're the ones putting it there. Plus, bipartisan efforts to regulate the release of sexually violent predators in our state.
You got to be able to work together and stop screaming from the fringes in order to get good things done.
And homelessness in Washington state reaches an all-time high. No surprise there. Also, no surprise that we're reading another Amazon hit piece from the Seattle Times. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Democrats were right. Democrats were right all along. Democracy is in peril. Except this time it's Democrats putting democracy in peril. And we've seen that on multiple fronts this year. We've seen it certainly in Washington state. We saw it over the summer with the harassment of people like us who were just innocently trying to get signatures for a referendum to restore parental rights. We've seen it with the latest round of initiatives, something we've covered extensively on the show, that Democrats care about democracy, they care about protecting democracy, but when it's their side stomping on democracy, silence. And now in the state of Colorado, I'm going to address this just briefly off the top of the show, because Lord knows you can hear about the Donald Trump fiasco on every other podcast and political outlet in the entire country. Donald Trump cannot be on the presidential primary ballot in Colorado in 2024. That is the decision from Colorado's Supreme Court. Their justification is the 14th Amendment. We'll get to that momentarily. But in the ruling, and it was a split decision, so certainly wasn't overwhelming. But in the majority decision, we conclude that because President Trump is disqualified from holding the office of president under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, it would be a wrongful act under the election code for the secretary to list President Trump as a candidate on the presidential primary ballot, the court's majority wrote in an unsigned opinion. Therefore, the secretary may not list President Trump's name on the 2024 presidential primary ballot, nor may she count any write-in votes cast for him. Look, this is not going to be a thing. I think we should start there. I'm not saying it's not significant and it's not serious and it doesn't have consequences for our country and our democracy, but this isn't going to be a thing. It's not going to hinder Donald Trump's ability to become president if voters so choose. This is already being appealed. The Supreme Court of the United States is certainly going to override it. In fact, even in the majority opinion, they basically challenged or asked or wanted the Supreme Court to do as much. But I also think that this tends to have the opposite impact. You know, and even NBC News in an opinion piece said this, their headline, Colorado hands Trump a political gift by barring him from the ballot. His Republican rivals acknowledge the court ruling's likely to help him in the GOP primary, and Democrats say the same. But I would also say, you know, this is something that should concern everyone. And when the Supreme Court in Colorado made this decision, they're using the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, specifically Section 3, and I'll just read it for you. But this had to do with after the Civil War and the Confederacy. What do you do with people who supported the Confederacy, who fought for the Confederacy, if they're going to seek, you know, public office or be in public office? And Section 3 says, no person shall be a senator, a representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office under the United States who, having previously taken an oath, blah, 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 engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. So they're basically saying that Trump committed insurrection with the whole January 6th thing. He's never been convicted of that. You can say it up and down, left and right. You can say he's an insurrectionist, that he aided and abetted what happened on January 6th. He hasn't been convicted of it. And so are we going to make it a normal thing in the United States that because you believe someone did something, that you're going to prevent the people of the United States from voting for them? That's an insane place to be, to weaponize our legal system, our criminal justice system in a way where you are taking away the rights of people to vote for someone who they want to vote for. Now, if Donald Trump was convicted of insurrection, this would be an entirely different conversation. And I think we'd be having this conversation outside the realm of just Colorado. But one, this isn't going to impact his ability to be elected president. In fact, I think it only helps the situation. But two, Democrats cannot claim that they're the party protecting democracy. They just can't do it. And I'm not saying that Republicans weren't absolutely losing their ever-loving minds in 2021. And I'm not saying the election conspiracy stuff isn't detrimental to our democracy either, and the attacks on election workers, et cetera. But at the same time, Democrats, you want to tell us for 4 years, oh, democracy is in peril. You got to elect us because we're defending democracy. And then you want to spit on democracy at every turn when it comes to shutting down people who disagree with you. Give me a freaking break. Give me a freaking break. And I've said on the show before, I've never voted for Donald Trump. I don't have TDS, though, okay? Occasionally I'll get someone who says, Brandy, you have TDS. I don't have TDS. Hating or liking Donald Trump doesn't consume my every thought. I just don't like the guy as the president. I don't like his personality. I don't like the things he says about other people. I don't like the way he treats other people. I did like some of his policies, and I'll tell you, the country didn't seem like it was such a hot mess, or the world for that matter, when Donald Trump was president. But I wanted to ask you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, I said, does the Colorado Supreme Court's decision to remove Donald Trump from the state's presidential primary ballot make you more or less likely to support his candidacy, or did it really not change your mind particularly on anything? A lot of you are saying that there was no change. Harold Burns says, this is a base ploy with political posturing mixed in. I doubt it will survive review by the Supreme Court. Even Confederates were not excluded until after they were found guilty in a court of law. Kim says his supporters in Colorado will just write him in, but this would actually prohibit, as you heard there, the Secretary of State from counting write-in votes. Chris Horblett says the bad orange man was right about so many things, but the one thing he was most correct about was that it's not him the left are after, it's the rest of us. He's just the one standing in the way. Will said, if I could vote for him more than once like a Dem, I would. I supported him in 2020 because the media tried to destroy him, and I support him now. He's an outsider and a leader, not a politician. I firmly disagree with him being a leader in the traditional sense. He's not someone who I would follow anywhere, although, like I said, I did agree with some of his policies, and I felt much more confident with the state of our country with him versus what's happening with Biden right now. Let's see, read one more. Christine says, my vote hasn't been decided, but if it's Trump or Biden as our only choice, we are screwed. And I will have to vote for Trump because I can't stand another term of Biden. And I will say, for the first time ever, I am actually really torn on this. So I think I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016.
What?
But you gotta... I'm pretty sure, and I was trying to remember this. I'm pretty sure, but listen, how old was I in 2016? I was like...
Wow, minus seven.
Minus seven. I was 28. Give me a break.
Yeah.
You grow up, right? But then I voted for Joe Jorgensen, the Libertarian candidate, mm-hmm. in 2020. So I've never voted for Trump, and I have been, in that sense, a never Trumper.
I guess.
Yeah, because I'm like 300 odd million people and you can't come up with someone better than that. This might be the first time where if it is between Trump and Biden, that's a very difficult decision for me.
Is it really though?
It is because I just not. Think it,
it's not.
I'm sorry.
It's not.
It's only because I just reject this idea that those have to be our choices. And part of me is like, I'd rather just vote for no one, but at the same, don't give me that look, Nicole. At the same time, we have local news to get to, I promise, although this does impact us locally. I mean, our vote won't matter in Washington State, obviously. However, it's the principle, right? And it's like, gosh.
And you have to build to something. So if everybody thinks that, then no one will ever think their vote matters. But maybe there will be someday a reason that it'll matter, right? Keep voting because that's what you do.
I can't commit to it. I still don't believe it's going to be Biden. I believe it's going to be Gavin Newsom or something, which in my mind is mm-hmm. worse for other reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, my issues with Biden, he's obviously made the United States very weak on the national stage or on the world stage. We've got war in Europe. We've got attacks on Israel. I mean, I don't think this would have happened under Trump. The economy is about to be in ruin because it's propped up on nothing, and working class people are suffering. And then it's like, well, Trump, he's kind of an ass, and that's kind of like all I got. And but I...
Exactly.
I mean, I shouldn't say that's all I got, because I do believe that Trump contributed to what happened on January 6th. I do believe that he has contributed to the rise of a more dangerous right wing in this country, although the left wing is absolutely out of its mind, nuts and dangerous in Seattle.
But don't you think their reaction to Trump is what created that? It's not necessarily the right. I mean, there are people that are crazy. On both sides, right? But it's the left making it
just,
you know, MAGA
saying.
Republican everything, and it makes
I agree. It's annoying. It's a total distraction, and Trump was and will be the biggest scapegoat for the left. In Seattle, even in Seattle, while the freaking city's just crumbling around us in the States, Trump. I was like, Trump what?
Yeah, Biden's been there for 3 years, and they're still saying
Trump. Right, Trump would blame things on Trump. It's like, that's kind of why I wanted to go away, is they don't have that scapegoat of MAGA Trump extremism. Like, give me someone who I can vote for.
Anyway, I'm with you that I think you should go away, but then I also think, of course, you have to vote for him if that's the name on the ticket.
You know, I haven't committed to anything yet.
Stop it. Don't be ridiculous.
We'll get back to this later. I got some local news to get to. All right, this is not a surprise. Homelessness is at a record high in Washington state. Does that surprise anyone? You know what else is at a record high? The amount of money we spend on homelessness in Washington state. So this is from HUD, Housing and Urban Development. They put out a national study, and homelessness is bad everywhere. The Seattle Times article, HUD reports record high homeless count in 2023 for the United States and for Washington. Let's see if this HUD report or if the Seattle Times wants to mention the clear and obvious reason why homelessness is at an all-time high, shall we? The 2023 annual homeless assessment report shows that more than 653,000 people were experiencing homelessness in the U.S., marking a 12% increase from 2022. The report uses compiled point-in-time count data, a method that attempts to count every person living homeless one day out of the year from across the nation to track the ebbs and flows of the nation's homelessness crisis. Washington's count was also at an all-time high, growing at an unprecedented rate, about 11%. Let's see. Rising housing costs, sunsetting pandemic-era aid programs, and a sharp increase of migrants and asylum seekers being bused to cities and needing shelter services are all likely playing a role in the increase, explained Greg Colburn, University of Washington associate professor and homeless researcher. Now, I'm not going to deny certainly the migrant aspect of this. We just talked about this in Washington State, down in SeaTac, I think it was, where you've got migrants from all over the world being bussed up from the southern border and overwhelming the homeless services that are available in areas of Washington, and certainly you're seeing it in New York. So I do think that's a contributing factor. You know what's not mentioned once in the Seattle Times article? Not one time about why homelessness is so bad in Washington and so bad across the country.
Well, drugs and personal choice. Like, people choose to do drugs. People choose
drugs,
like,
and personal choice
and
are
mental
the same thing.
Illness and yes, all of those things.
They did not mention the drug crisis one freaking time. Are you kidding me? And they want to continue on this. Oh, no affordable housing. We spend billions on the homeless industrial complex in Washington state. We have endless nonprofits, endless entities that are contracted with taxpayer funds. There is no reason in Washington state, if you are someone who is homeless simply because you cannot afford a place to live, you can get help in a second. There's no reason you shouldn't be able to, right? You're telling me we spend billions of dollars, and if a mom with her kids comes to you and says, I cannot afford rent, you're telling me the government can't help that person? If that's the case, then absolutely defund every homelessness program because you're worthless. That's not what's happening. It's not what is happening. It is a lie. It's manufactured. Are there a small percentage of people who, yeah, they're really struggling to get by, and then you want to add taxes to their life, like on gas and make groceries absolutely unsustainable and you want to add regulations that make it $9,000 to $30,000 more expensive to build a home and then complain about, oh, housing is so unaffordable. So, and then they want to say the pandemic. If the pandemic, if we were doing fine in Washington state, the pandemic hit and homelessness skyrocketed, I would believe that. That's not what's happened. I've been here for 15 years. This has been a gradual but steady increase in homelessness over a decade. And it corresponds with a worsening drug crisis. Meth to heroin to fentanyl. And you guys want to continue to ignore the elephant in the room that's screaming at you, stomping on you, saying, hey, it's me, it's the drug crisis and the corresponding mental health crisis. But yeah, keep saying we need to spend billions more on affordable housing. Meanwhile, we've had one man who's been the governor during all of this, during this entire increase, who is doing what? Who's asking for more money to push into programs that are having no results. An 11% increase year over year in homelessness in Washington state. And Governor Jay Inslee wants hundreds of millions in additional dollars when he has not shown over the last 12 years of being governor that anything, any ideas he has are making progress. And he claims, he said it in his State of the State address last year, that the single underlying cause of homelessness is a lack of affordable housing. You cannot trust someone to fix a problem that they refuse to properly identify. And then they'll say, oh yeah, and also drugs and mental health contribute to it. No, that is the problem. That is the problem. And so we want to act surprised. Homelessness is at record rates. And then what are we going to do this? What are we going to do in 2024? Elect the same freaking people from the same party who just want more and more and more and more money? And it's going to continue to get worse and worse and worse and worse. That's insane. That's truly, truly insane. And then they want to go into this federal funding. Let me just read a couple more excerpts of this. Some experts point to the end of pandemic-focused policies and funding as one reason why numbers are surging. The pandemic was extremely disruptive, and it produced precarity for many households as rents rose dramatically in several U.S. cities. But at the same time, federal, state, and local government leaders enacted several protections for renters and passed assistance measures to help people stay in their homes and meet their basic needs. King County distributed nearly $400 million in federal funding through its Eviction Prevention and Rental Assistance Program. And again, you knew that wasn't permanent. You knew that wasn't permanent, and you made it so hard for landlords to get by. Now, as we come out of that, not only are people who had assistance for 2-3 years not getting that assistance anymore because it was one-time funding, but you made life so miserable for landlords that they're selling their units, and those units aren't even going to be available for rent anymore. So you've compounded the situation. You've compounded it, certainly. Rather than use those resources and target those resources in a way where you'd actually reduce the problem, where you'd actually make the problem better, you made it worse by pumping a bunch of money into people's hands, not improving their circumstances at all, pumping a bunch of temporary money in their hands, and then you knew yanking it out. And now you're like, oh, things got worse. Meh. These people are insane. Like, who is running our government? Wild stuff. I'm in a mood today.
Yes. People have noticed.
Have they? What are they saying?
They said you're on fire at the end of this year. So
I'm in a mood.
Yeah. Well, that's fine.
I'm going home at the end of the week. I'm excited. And Nicole knew right before the show, I could not stop looking at pictures of Lucky, my dog.
It's true.
I was like, where's my phone?
She's so cute.
Oh, I just tweeted out this picture of her. Oh. And she's smiling in it.
Oh my.
I just love her so much.
I'm not dancing.
I'm not on drugs. I'm not on drugs. Not illegal. I love our job, you know? I love our job. I'm excited for 2024 because I think hopefully people are waking up. I just want to see some improvements. this stuff is crazy. And I just really struggle with. There's a couple things I struggle with. I struggle with understanding or putting myself in the mind or the shoes of people who don't see this, who don't see the failure in it.
what it's clouded by. I'm not.
I don't know. Is it extreme ideology? Is it you don't want to admit your side is wrong? I can't put myself in that position to understand it. I just really can't. And then I also have this deep resentment and disappointment for my colleagues in the press, my former colleagues in the press, who just carry water for these arguments. I mean, the whole Seattle Times article, not one mention of substance abuse as a key driver. Have you not had your reporters out interviewing homeless people? Have you not been out to camps to see that it's drugs and it's mental illness? And sometimes it's mental illness that's induced through drugs. You know, I don't get it. Is it laziness? Is it ideology? Is it just a hope that it's not something? And by the way, that is a more complicated issue to solve for. If it were just a lack of affordable housing, that's a pretty easy solution. If you've got people who are sound of mind, who just need a place to live, we'd be out of this lickety split. But that's not it. It's complex. It's difficult. You have people in the throes of these crises that you have to get them out of in order for them to get off the streets. You can't just put someone with a drug addiction, mental health crisis in a tiny house and be like, problem solved. No, that doesn't help anything. It doesn't help them. It doesn't help society. And that's where you get all this wasted money.
Well, and
it's
again,
like pushing towards it, stupid.
It's a mindset, right? Because it's an entitlement, but then also a dependency. I mean, we are fostering this kind of poor me, I'm a victim. So let me just victimize myself further in this world, because then government will bail me out, or I'll just live the way I want to live and nobody will do anything about it.
Yeah. And with the tenants, like, oh, I'm going to get my rent paid for. Cool. Right. Not going to plan ahead for when that money runs out. And then I'm going to be like, oh, I can't afford to pay my rent. What happened?
Right.
Well, the government gave you money that was always temporary. And now your situation has only not improved. Now you're going to get evicted. And now you're in a worse situation than you were.
Yes. And there was another article based on evictions has gone up, right? So they're assuming all these people have gone into homelessness because evictions is up.
Right.
Well, no, they've chosen not to pay. So then they get evicted.
And there was no, that's the thing for me. That's the thing. And that's government. There was no requirement that you had to prove that you lost your job or income as a result of COVID. There was nothing.
Nope.
So you could have had the exact same amount of money, or in fact, you could have been making more money on unemployment. So now you're getting this, a raise off the government teat and the taxpayer, and then you're also getting free rent.
Yep.
Right? So you're getting both. And then you get the ability to be on unemployment goes away. The money goes away here. You're back to what your regular pay was, even if you didn't lose your job. It's crazy stuff when you think about it.
It is.
Anyway, let's move on. Let's move on. Ridiculousness. Got a lot of good stuff coming up. Coming up next, some great bipartisan momentum to improve regulations around the release of sexually violent predators. Oh, you love to see it. But first, as we talk about the landlord-tenant laws, things are a mess. In Seattle, we lost a lot of rental units. Our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com, not only is he a real estate agent if you're looking to put your house on the market, but he's also a small mom-and-pop landlord. He's got units down in Tacoma, which just passed really strict landlord-tenant protections, even more so than Seattle. And he says only time will tell if the same thing happens in Tacoma that happened in Seattle.
Since 2019, Seattle has lost over 11,000 rental units.
Wow, yeah.
This is important. This is something, you know, like those are less rental units on the market. Majority of those, Brandy, they're not crappy little apartments. Those are single family homes. That is the cream of the crop when it comes to, you know, rental inventory. Those are not being sold to other investors. You know, those just, they don't pencil anymore. Somebody's had that for 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and that's going to go to somebody who is going to move, you know, into the city. That is out of the rental pool. That is gone.
Yeah, and that's the opposite of what we're supposed to believe this is all about, is keeping people in affordable places to live. Wes says that he's not sure if he's going to sell his Tacoma rental units, but it's certainly on the table. He's sort of time will tell situation. So if you're thinking about selling your rental units because you just cannot live in this political environment anymore and be a landlord, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. I mean, he's in it too. He knows the exact scenario that you're in. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, an issue we talked about at the tail end of last year's legislative session is the issue with what's called SVPs, sexually violent predators. So in Washington State, we throw them on an island, which I think is great. I know Democrats want to shut the island down, but gosh, I wish everybody had an island to put the sex offenders on. So not all sex offenders go to McNeil Island. It's the worst of the worst. It's people who have been deemed irredeemable, people who serve their time in prison, and then they're deemed to be at a high likelihood of reoffendence. You toss them on an island for a civil commitment. Love it. But the issue is, and it's a constitutional issue, you can't just put someone on an island for the rest of their life. You can't do that. And so there has to be an avenue for them to go back into society. And so there have been these transfers of sexually violent predators off McNeil Island into less secure facilities in a neighborhood near you. We saw this fight in Enumclaw, where a sexually violent predator was placed in this house close to a kid's bus stop. We saw the fight in Tenino, where parents successfully pushed back against one of these LRAs, these community facilities run by a private entity for these violent predators to be housed at. So at the end of the legislative session, all of this was just starting to come up. Representatives Travis Couture and Dan Griffey, both Republicans in the Tenino area, they were trying like hell to get lawmakers to do a couple things. Improve community notification, because these communities were blindsided. You can't do that. You can't put the worst of the worst sex offenders next door to families and not give them enough notice. They were also trying to just put a moratorium on the release of these violent sex offenders from McNeil Island until this program could get a second look. And I think that's common sense as well. So this stuff didn't go anywhere. I think it just came up too late in the legislative session last year. However, Representative Travis Couture and his colleagues on the right and the left took this issue very seriously over the summer. They went to McNeil Island. They talked to the stakeholders. And they got together, some common sense Republicans and Democrats. They've crafted a number of proposals that they are going to put forth in the upcoming legislative session. Again, on a bipartisan basis, which is wonderful because this is a common sense issue. Representative Travis Couture was nice enough to come on the show and talk to us about what they're working on. Representative Travis Couture, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me on, Brandy.
Yeah, this is an issue we've talked with you quite a bit about, but it kind of came up later in the legislative session last year, and we didn't see a whole lot get done on it. Do you feel like, though, those conversations have set you up to be able to actually put something through this session?
Yeah, if you'll recall, one of the bills myself and my seatmate, Representative Dan Griffey, tried to push was, you know, doing a moratorium or a pause on the whole system so that we can establish a work group to fix some of these loopholes and better promote public safety. Well, we didn't get a hearing for that. We were dropping it kind of late in the session, but there was a lot of action and support for that idea. And so even though we didn't pass the bill, we essentially, over the interim in the summer, we conducted our own little work group with the state agencies and people from the other side and everywhere else, counties, so that we can try to, you know, draft a bill that is well worked and fixes a lot of those loopholes. And I think that we're getting really close to accomplishing that right now.
Yeah. And one of the things that I like to hear is that you've worked with the other side on this, because that's going to be necessary to get something done. I know one of the things that you did is you actually went out to McNeil Island, where the sexually violent predators are housed. You had Democrats there, including Representative Mari Levitt, and she's now on a bill with you. And this to me is the most common sense one, which would improve public notice for the release of these offenders. Can you talk a little bit about what that entails?
Yeah, so there's essentially three pieces, three SVP bills having to do with LRAs and public notice and everything else that we're pushing. And so myself and Rep. Levitt, we were at McNeil Island together, and we had a lot of different conversations about different things that we can do. And public notice came up as something that we have to get across the line. We have to be able to work with our communities and not hide what the government is doing from them. And we have to make sure that when we give that public notice, that they have all the information about how the system works. And as you recall, back in my district in Tenino, that caused a huge stir because there just wasn't any public notice. So that bill isn't pre-filed and dropped quite yet, but we're very close. We're basically tying the bow on top of that Christmas present right now. But yeah, really happy to work with Rep. Levitt. She's been a good partner in this. And then we also dropped I already pre-filed one of the three bills, House Bill 1926, and that has Rep. Levitt and Rep. Dolio as co-sponsors as well, with Rep. Griffey joining here pretty soon. And that bill is good. That has the Attorney General's office support as well. And that bill will ensure that as sexually violent predators don't collect DOC supervision credits while in the LRA, because what would happen is they would get released later after having collected all these credits, and then there would be no DOC supervision for those people. So we're basically saying, hey, while you're in the LRA, you cannot collect those credits. And the effect of that is that there'd be more supervision time. It's lengthier for those people after the LRA, and that's going to help promote public safety.
Yeah, on the one that I said is common sense, you know, this public notice aspect. You've got a Democrat who's leading that bill. You're supporting it. At the same time, though, you remember what Governor Jay Inslee said at the end of last legislative session. He called it unduly burdensome, the kind of notice that you guys wanted for some of these communities like Tenino. So can you get something like that past the governor?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, DSHS is basically under the umbrella of the governor. And I can't, predict the future and say for certain that he won't veto it again. But all I can do is work with the other side, his party, work with his state agency, find a consensus, and then put something together. One of the promising things is that, and we've been promised hearings on all three of these bills.
Ooh.
Chair Goodman, Representative Roger Goodman. So we've been working with him as well to make sure that we have hearings for these things and give them the best chance of passage. That's something that we struggled with previously. But having gone through the process of working with all the different stakeholders, the counties, the agencies, the Attorney General's office, and even Democrats from the House, and including Representative Goodman, we've got to a place where everyone now feels comfortable hearing and pushing forward these bills. So that's very promising. And I think everyone understands that, last session we were really up against a clock. And now that we've put in a lot of work over the summer to work these bills and promote public safety, everyone thinks that we have to do something this session to move the needle across the finish line. So, very happy that we're going to get hearings on it, and that's good for me because I want my constituents to be able to have a voice in Olympia on this matter, and not just my constituents, but people up in Enumclaw or other places as well, or even Rep. Levitt's district. And so, I really we've had a very bipartisan effort on this. Everyone understands the task. The agencies have been helpful. We're clearing some like final language hurdles right now on like the public notice bill, and then the bigger fixing the loopholes bill. And the way we've done this, even though it started with myself and Dan Griffey really putting together the work group, but then we looped in people like Rep. Levitt, right? And we decided the best way to move all three of these bills strategically was to make sure that we all had a piece of the pie. And so that's why you'll see me being the prime sponsor of one, Dan Griffey being the prime sponsor of another, and Rep. Levitt being the prime sponsor of one. And I think that's kind of what's missing today. You got to be able to work together and stop screaming from the fringes, in order to get good things done. And I know some people don't like that in today's day and age, but that's good, effective governance.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the thought and the work, obviously, that went into this to get to this point. Because when you're the minority party, you can try to propose things in a silo, but the reality that you have to deal with is that you need Democrats in order to push this legislation forward. And so I'm really happy to see the work that you guys put into this, the Democrats who are on board, Roger Goodman in the Public Safety Committee. And I know there's a lot of communities who have been fighting this fight that are going to be very grateful if these things can make it across the finish line. Yeah, and I'm going to have more from my conversation with Representative Travis Couture on the Sunday show this week. You can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, Sundays with subscribers, on a different bill that he's taking heat from conservatives on. So Representative Travis Couture, a Republican, is working with Attorney General Bob Ferguson on an AI task force. And some Republicans, conservatives, are livid with him over it. So he and I are going to discuss that just for subscribers on the Sunday show this week. So make sure to tune in for that. But I'm so happy to see this. I'm happy to see Democrats working with Republicans on this issue. And again, I use the phrase common sense so much, but yeah, if you're going to put the worst of the worst sex offenders, someone who is so bad, you put them on an island. If you're going to put them in someone's community in their backyard, we've got to improve notification. They should be in a facility that is secure, in a facility that DSHS has control over, for sure. And so there's just some common sense stuff that they're going to be able to do. And I think the fact that very smart to get Democrats on board early, involved in the process, let them carry at least one of the bills, and let's just get them across the finish line. I don't care who gets credit for it. Although, I will give a lot of credit to parents in Tenino and Enumclaw who raised holy hell about this, because I don't think it would have been on any of our radar without citizens who raised alarm bells and who pushed back. All right, before we get to our segment, Unbelievable, it is the end of the year, and I just want to celebrate those of you who had a fantastic journey this year on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I've gotten a lot of emails, although send me your before and after pictures. I would love to see it, because a lot of you have been on this weight loss journey just like I have over the past year. Ben and Leslie, we've been showing their pictures. I mean, man, I remember when Ben sent me a picture of when he started, it was him cooking bacon in the kitchen. And then they're in San Jose running marathons and just enjoying so many aspects of life they hadn't enjoyed because they were dealing with a weight, more so a health and wellness issue. And now they're just living their best life. And you love, love, love to see it. So now that we've come to the end of the year, if you found success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, please send us before and after pictures. Go to our website, undividedpod.com. Use the contact feature. We'd love to feature some of your success stories in the new year. If you've been thinking about starting the program, new year, new you, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Ah, that's a good jingle, right? Mm-hmm. Boop. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation. I'm going to get a call from Dr. Coogan like, don't make up jingles. He said weightlossclinic.com. Too much coffee today. All right. The Seattle Times with another absolutely unhinged story about Amazon. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. First, I want to just note, before we get to the Seattle Times lunacy, Amazon's vacating another building in Seattle. And this is important because it's the second time we've seen a major story like this. This is from Puget Sound Business Journal, Amazon to vacate another downtown Seattle tower. They're letting their lease expire in downtown Seattle on the edge of its Denny Triangle campus. And why is this? Well, Amazon is certainly not extending or expanding its footprint in Seattle. And I think that had Seattle been a good public partner to Amazon, had Seattle and the city council really realized and appreciated what Amazon does for the city's economy, I don't think we would be seeing, even with the, you know, pandemic that sent people home. I mean, Amazon's trying to get people back to the office. So I really think this has to do with Amazon realizing that Seattle's never going to see them as a good corporate partner. They're going to continue to penalize them for being so successful, for bringing good paying jobs into the city. And so their sights are just set on Bellevue. And this just shows that. And I guess, you know, why the heck would you want to be in Seattle when the newspaper of record is obsessed, absolutely obsessed with doing negative stories about you? To the point where it's unhinged. I would say, like, the Times has, what's the opposite of a hard-on? Can I say that?
Oh, my goodness.
What is the opposite?
Well, I'm not going to say it. Because that would sound worse than that.
Whatever the opposite of that is.
Well, people know it. It's going through their minds right now. Don't say it.
The Seattle Times
don't type it in the comments either.
For Amazon. I guess, what would the opposite be?
Well, limp.
What is happening today?
I don't
what
know.
What is going on? Am I just excited for the holidays?
I don't know. You're out of control.
Out of control. Whatever the opposite of that is, think about it in your own mind. That's what the Seattle Times has for Amazon.
Well,
because they'll take
it.
These really obscure things and turn it into a hit piece on Amazon. I mean, they've done entire stories focusing on the sad sack tale from one Amazon employee.
Yeah, and you could pretty much, with every story and every account, you could sub in any business. And
right.
It's just a business issue. It's the cost of doing business, or it's the cost of having any business in your neighborhood, or it's just that they feel the need to attack Amazon or to have a headline because maybe that gets a lot of clicks, good or bad. Maybe Amazon just get clicks and that's why they do it.
And they'd feature people who are so sad to have to come back to work in the office and how it like ruined their life. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, but it's a job. This isn't North Korea. This isn't a work camp. You have personal choice. And if you're an engineer at Amazon, you have marketable skills. If it bothers you that much, go work somewhere else. But that woman who protested Amazon, led
right.
protests and internal chats, arranging protests, and then lost her, I think she either felt compelled to resign or something.
She didn't want to come back.
And she didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, yeah, I think any... I mean, Nicole, I'm sorry, but if you were leading protests against me, I would fire you for sure, without question.
And again, I don't know why they go after Amazon, because there are employees at Nordstrom that had to come back, or some chose to leave instead. Starbucks, I mean, any business downtown that told their employees they had to come back, there was probably some that didn't come.
And never mind the benefit that had to the city that they come back. And Amazon, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not saying they're a perfect company. You employ that many people, you're that big, you're bound to have issues. But to suggest that they're not a good corporate partner, they could be a lot worse. I'll tell you that. But the Seattle Times, this latest story focuses on a UW study, which I'm over UW studies. I mean, UW will find some point they want to make. They'll do a study. I mean, it was you know, UW that did the study on the... public transportation and how, you know, there's 100% meth and fentanyl.
Meth on every
but then they're
test
like, that doesn't necessarily mean it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's like, doesn't it though? Mm-hmm. Doesn't it? Anyway, so this is the headline from the Seattle Times. Seattle neighborhoods near Amazon warehouses get more pollution, fewer packages. UW study finds. Let's read some of this gem, shall we? Amazon's distribution facilities may be exposing neighbors to pollution and disproportionately affecting communities that are predominantly home to people of color, according to a new study from the University of Washington. The UW study found neighborhoods within 2 miles of Amazon last mile facilities were exposed to twice as much traffic from delivery vehicles and trucks compared to other neighborhoods in the Seattle metro area. The last mile facilities include Amazon's delivery stations and sortation centers and are the last leg in a package's journey through Amazon's vast distribution network before reaching a customer's doorstep. While those neighbors pay the pollution price, the residents are not the ones buying on Amazon, according to the study. Researchers found residents of the neighborhoods close to Amazon's last mile facilities order 14% fewer packages than the Seattle average. Okay. Wow. So just a few things to point out here. These massive Amazon, you know, sorting facilities, etc., they're going to be in industrial areas, right? You're not putting one, for instance, on the top of Queen Anne Hill. You're just not doing that. You need the space to do it. So they're going to be in areas that I would argue already have higher pollution, industrial areas. And I was chatting with someone earlier about this who said, look, it's like saying like, oh, if you live closer to a highway, you're exposed to more pollution. Well, yeah, you live close to a highway, right? If you're living close to an industrial area, you're probably going to be exposed to more pollution. I also think it's interesting, you know, UW doesn't explicitly say, oh, it's Amazon's fault, because there are other contributing factors. And in the air, it's not like the emissions, it's got Amazon. It's like a smile, you know, and it's like it's hitting someone in the face and you're like, oh, this is an Amazon emission. No, you've got all these whatever pollution and you can't distinguish from what's coming from Amazon, what's coming from someone else. I would also point out when it talks about all these Amazon delivery vehicles, you know how many their fleet, you know how many electric vehicles they have in their fleet? So how are you distinguishing that way as well? You might have an Amazon delivery vehicle going by you, but is it actually polluting your environment?
You also might have one going by that you don't even know is an Amazon delivery vehicle, because
that's the other thing, because it might
not be a Prius with somebody they've contracted.
I mean, so not only is it like you're vilifying these Amazon facilities that are bringing a lot of jobs, reliable mm-hmm. jobs to these communities. But it's like, oh, but also pollution that may or may not be coming from those facilities in areas that may or may not have already had higher levels of pollution because they're already industrial areas. Like, what is wrong with you? And the UW does, I mean, the UW, they just wanted to have a study vilifying Amazon and talking about climate change. That's what they wanted. And then they found
they were petitioned to do.
Right. And they found a willing partner in the Seattle Times to absolutely push that garbage out there to their readership. And for what purpose? I mean, Amazon has a, wasn't it Jeff Bezos that named the arena climate pledge?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think, and we've already said, that empty climate promises don't mean anything, Jay Inslee. But this isn't a company that is actively trying to pollute the environment. I mean, they have set, you know, internal company goals related to emissions that they didn't have to set for themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's so insane to me. And it really is, I can't pin what the motivation is for the Seattle Times. I'm not saying that Amazon, you have to just like absolutely act like they don't bring any problems, like a company that big doesn't bring any problems to our city or to our state or to our country or world. I'm not saying that. But this kind of stuff is truly unhinged. And then it's polluting the people who aren't ordering. They're ordering 14% fewer packages than the Seattle average.
Oh, they're racist. The company's racist.
So Amazon, what you need to do is the diesel vehicles you do have, you need to take them to neighborhoods that have a higher volume of packages being delivered. You need to just sit them, let them sit there idle and just rev just to get the just to even it out a little bit. Absolutely ridiculous. All right. Can we do a double dose of unbelievable today?
I suppose.
It's one of those days. Let's do it. Somebody asked, who funded that Amazon study? We'll find out. We'll look into it. Did anybody commission it, et cetera? All right, the Seattle Department of Transportation is very disappointed in you. Very disappointed in you for not doing your part to keep our sidewalks clean. The Seattle Department of Transportation sent out a tweet saying there's been an increase in complaints about neighbors failing to remove leaves and overhanging vegetation from sidewalks. Do your part to keep sidewalks safe and accessible so everyone can travel. It's not only the right thing to do, it's also the law. I don't disagree. Hey, be a good neighbor. Get those leaves out of there. Also helps keep the storm drains clear. I go out there and I'll kick the leaves out of the storm drains occasionally. You know, make sure people can use the sidewalks. The issue I have is with the messenger. The issue I have is with the Seattle Department of Transportation having the absolute audacity to tell you to do your part to keep the sidewalks safe and accessible so everyone can travel. Any idea why I find that to be so hypocritical? Could it be that the city of Seattle has absolutely no qualms with tents lining sidewalks across the city so people can't use sidewalks downtown? God forbid you're in a wheelchair. You're not going anywhere downtown. Human feces on the sidewalk, trash littering the sidewalks, massive encampments. Yeah, I don't think the Seattle Department of Transportation is really focused on doing its part to keep sidewalks safe and accessible so everyone can travel. But they certainly want to make sure that you're cleaning up the leaves outside your house.
I like their snarky language, too.
Unbelievable.
Talk to people like they're children.
Unbelievable. Okay. Before we get to national, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the angles on the Trump stuff and some of the reactions that we've seen to it. But first, last week, the Fed decided to keep interest rates steady. It was the third time they've done that after a bunch of increases, and the market just went gangbusters. But our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, he specializes in risk management, and he says, look, just because the market went gangbusters after the Fed made that decision does not mean that we aren't heading toward precarious economic times in 2024.
I think they are beginning to try to juice the economy going into the next election.
Yeah.
Right? The Fed can say whatever they want. They are an extension of the Biden reelection campaign. They are. You know, everybody's excited. Oh, yeah, the Fed's going to cut rates. It juiced stock market. Stock market was up 1.3% today. the two-year bonds, the two-year government bonds that we own that are paying us 5%, their value went up 2.9% today, right? And this goes to our whole point of saying, hey, guys, you're all in there buying stocks at record valuations going into what looks like a recession, okay? Should be. And I think there's a lot more money to be made owning bonds with zero risk. It is one of the worst risk reward setups I have ever seen in my life, in my career, to go in there and buy stocks at these levels.
Yeah, and it would be ridiculous to head into 2024, especially given what's happening with the election year and some of the lies that are going to be coming out to make you believe that everything is just hunky-dory. Hunky-dory. It would be ridiculous not to make sure that you're not protecting your retirement, your hard-earned retirement, against risk. So do two things. Check out Zach Abraham's weekly radio show, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. And while you're there, learn more about Bulwark Capital Management's risk management strategy and how they are protecting portfolios against loss as we speak. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, back to the situation in Colorado. So as I said at the beginning of the show, the decision from the Colorado Supreme Court to remove Donald Trump from the presidential primary ballot is not actually going to be a thing. Not only is it going to be overturned, I think, by the U.S. Supreme Court pretty quickly, but the chair of the Republican Party in Colorado went on CNN and said, if that doesn't happen, we're just going to switch from a primary process to a caucus.
We think this is an absurd ruling, and we're going to do whatever we can to protect the rights of voters in Colorado, and frankly, across the nation, to choose Donald Trump if they so choose. We're going to appeal this to the United States Supreme Court. We're a party to the case, and we're not going to take this lying down. And if need be, we're going to withdraw from the primary and go to a strict caucus process that would allow our voters to choose Donald Trump if they want.
Yeah, so it's going to be a non-issue. However, you know, if it were to, in some universe, be successful, and Donald Trump, you know, Republicans can't choose from him, they can't write his name in Colorado, that would benefit people like Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis. But Vivek Ramaswamy came out and said he believes that all Republicans in the race need to fight back against this, even if it would benefit them, and he is going to do that personally.
They have just tried to bar President Trump from the Colorado ballot using an unconstitutional maneuver that is a bastardization of the 14th Amendment to our U.S. Constitution. This was a provision, Section 3, that was designed to bar Confederate members, people who switched to the Confederacy, from actually being able to serve. That's very different than what's at issue here, to say the least. This is a hollowed out husk of what the country was built on. The basic principle that we, the people, select our leadership, not the unelected elite class in the back of palace halls. That's old world Europe, not the United States. That's why I'm making a pledge today that I will withdraw, I pledge to withdraw from the Colorado GOP primary ballot unless and until Trump's name is restored. And I demand that Ron DeSantis and Chris Christie and Nikki Haley do the same thing, or else these Republicans are simply complicit in this unconstitutional attack on the way we conduct our constitutional republic.
Is Chris Christie still in the presidential race? That's what I took away from that. I was like, wait, Chris Christie's still in it? Look, it might be a little easier for Vivek to say that because he's not going to win. But I think he's right. I think that this is an attack on our democracy. It is an attack specifically on Republicans. And this is the kind of thing where they should be banded together on it. I'll also say, you know, we started by saying maybe our democracy is in peril. And it's also making us look absolutely foolish to other countries where we talk about the importance of democracy and protecting democracies around the world. The president of El Salvador tweeting simply, the United States has lost its ability to lecture any other country about democracy. I do not disagree. We'll get your questions and comments coming up next. But first, if you're going through your family's budget, do this one thing for me. Take the First Mark Challenge. Everyone needs insurance. You can't get away from that unless you're breaking the law, which I don't think any of you are. So you have insurance. Why not work with a local company who can handle all your insurance needs for you, make sure you're getting the best price, make sure you're properly covered, and then handle all of that for you so you don't have to every single year go back, call the big box stores, and try to beg them to give you a lower rate. First Mark Insurance can do the begging for you. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge in the spring. We got better insurance for the same price. We never pay Firstmark a dime. It really is a no-brainer. Dave Taylor is the CEO of Firstmark, and he says, yes, you know, our goal is going to be to save you money if we can make sure that you've got the insurance you need and also save you money in the process. But there's a lot of other things they bring to the table.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't, okay? No. Yeah, and I really wish I'd heard about the Firstmark Challenge for years on the radio. I wish Mike and I had done it years ago, because it really has taken so much off our plate every year when it comes to reevaluating our insurance needs. It's all handled by Firstmark. It's just one call for us. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the Firstmark Challenge. Let me know how it goes. All right, questions and comments from the live stream. Matt Gilbert. Oh, Matt, you really disappointed me yesterday with your super chat that made us talk about, I mean, I did talk about male genitalia today.
So I know, maybe on your own.
Maybe doth protest too much. Matt Gilbert with a $5 super chat. We had world peace under Donald Trump. I'm not going to disagree with that.
I said I don't mind the days where you talk about Trump, even though it's not my favorite topic, but everybody seems to like me more on these days.
Oh, well, I'm going to guess. I haven't read the comments you pulled. I'm going to guess they're all, Nicole's the best.
I mean, da-da-da. There's just a few of those.
Rick Johnson says, policy over personality. Trump's the right man for the job. I just would like policy and personality that I don't dislike. Is that so much to ask, you know, with all the people that we have to choose from?
Well, I think that's the problem, is that because of what it becomes when you take that office, nobody that has a great personality, great goals, wants to run for that.
I'm going
to
say something.
It destroys families.
Well, everybody already hates me on the show today. I like Barack Obama's personality. I thought he had a great personality. I thought he was a great speaker. Did I agree with all his policies? No. He had a good personality.
Yes.
But it's not impossible.
I think I don't know.
Anyway.
I think that nobody really wants that job. But
oh, I agree.
It's going to be all of the things that all of the boxes we check.
Again, no sane
Barack
people.
Doesn't check all of our boxes. He checks some.
Yeah. I think Nikki Haley has a good personality.
I don't know her well enough to say that.
She and I are best friends. No, I don't know. Sharon Barber says, Nicole giving Brandy the stink eye for once. I voted for Hillary Clinton, I felt it. I felt the death needles. I wouldn't today, by the way, hindsight.
Good.
Chris says, Brandy, would you vote Vivek? If it was Vivek versus Biden, yes. And by the way, just because I'm hesitant to vote for Donald Trump for the first time ever, that doesn't mean I'm voting for Biden, but I just want to make that very clear. I'm not voting for Biden. I would never vote for Biden. The question is, do I just not vote, or do I give my vote to a third party, or do I just sock it up and do something I've never done before and vote for Donald Trump on a principle of the matter? TZ Burton says, Brandy has never called a Democrat an extremist, only Republicans. Do you not watch the show? Have you not watched any of our shows for the past couple weeks that have been about Democratic extremism in Washington state? I don't think that's a fair comment. Deanne Sanderson, my thumbs up today is for Nicole. That's not making fun of you. It's making fun of Nicole for putting that comment in there. Let me see here. What, I skipped a bunch. Hold on. Kim Boyington with a $9.99 super chat. Just want to get this in about the chicken checks. What is the average amount? Whether I receive a check or not, I will donate that amount of money to my local food bank. So I think you get two options. It's either $50 or $120.
I believe so.
I don't think there's a sliding
scale.
50
is a single person, and then $120 is a family.
You know what somebody was texting me and told me, which I think is a good idea? I mean, the checks go to more low-income individuals, so they might need that money, and I'm not saying give it away. But what if you got a chicken check, again, a bribery thing from Bob Ferguson,
mm-hmm.
and if it's $50 or $120, you cashed it, you turned around, and you donated that money to Dave Reichert.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that good?
That's pretty
good. So you take the chicken check money that Bob Ferguson is using to try to bribe mm-hmm. you into voting for him. Money that, by the way, most people didn't have to prove they actually had spent on overpriced chicken and tuna.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, you take the check, cash it, turn around, give your chicken check to Dave Reichert.
That's at least glorious. Some of it.
That is glorious. Oh, I love that. At least some of it. Leah says, Brandy's taken the red pill. Welcome, B. I've been red-pilled for a long time. I mean, maybe it just gets worse and worse every day. Kathy totally agrees with Nicole. Nicole loved choosing these today.
Yeah.
Blech. Liking someone's personality shouldn't be a requirement to vote for someone. What the country needs now is to try to recover. He's the best right now to be put in place. I just think we can do better. Don't be mad at me. Certain Uncertainty says, oh, you want to read comments, Nicole? I figured since they're all complimenting you, you might not want to read them.
I think you're past those now.
Because it looks a little self-serving. Okay, why don't you...
Yeah, Certain Uncertainty. This is from Patreon. Does anyone else feel like the country is playing a large game of tug-of-war and you're just in the middle wanting to cut the rope and see everyone else fall on their booties?
Yeah. You can say ass.
I know, but I chose not to.
Your hair is hitting the mic today.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Yes, I chose not to. Oh. It was also said that your term earlier deserves the swear jar.
I actually snorted earlier too, so that I'll give $21 to the swear jar. Just to appease Mike if he's just taken aback. Because he didn't want me to swear because he's like, you're classy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but then I said you're that. Classy, so lady. Maybe that didn't. Okay. Homelessness. And the fact that it's worse than ever. We're spending more money than ever. Let's just keep doing that. Todd says, I will disagree. If you're working poor, then finding housing is very difficult. If you are on drugs, then housing is easy. I agree with that in the sense that if you are, you know, working, you've got a full-time job, housing itself is unaffordable. Mm-hmm. Being able to actually buy a house for your family to afford rent, I totally understand that. And you're not going to get the same kind of help that you would get if you told them, I'm living in my car.
Right.
It's almost like if you're the working poor, just like say you're living in your car to get help from the government. So I totally understand that. And you also have to consider what's driving the lack of affordable housing. We talked about this with the Building Industry Association of Washington. Mm-hmm. Governor Inslee and his allies are adding all these regulations that make it more expensive to build homes. You can't build affordable housing if affordable housing is not affordable. You can't build affordable housing if housing isn't affordable to build. Mm-hmm. So if you want to make it affordable, I'm not saying that you give them a carte blanche to put up houses using sticks, you know, using toothpicks. Nobody's saying that. And I think that's the thing, too, is the government believes that, oh, if we leave that industry unregulated, they're going to put up all these crap houses and they're going to fall down. It's like, no, they take pride in their work. They take pride in their communities. Could you have some people who go around that? Sure. But then nobody's going to contract with them if they don't do good work. Mm-hmm. So you let the private market, you let the free market determine who, you know, what builders are going to do well and which ones are not.
Right. I also think, I mean, in addition to that, it's property taxes that they keep raising and a lot. Mm-hmm. And then it's also all of the different fees.
Levies.
I mean, and then the renter laws that are causing people to take their rentals off the market and sell them for high prices.
Right.
So there's a lot that contributes to that. And it's not just what they say contributes to it.
I agree.
So Adam says, I believe it's the government's plan to create a dependency on them. And
and this is the thing. I think there's two types of people. I think there's people who believe the government can make them happy and people who believe the government can only make them unhappy. And I think that if you're relying on the government for your happiness, you are always going to be unhappy because the government cannot make you happy. Only you can make yourself happy. And I just want the government to leave me alone so I can run my life as I see fit. We'll read one more.
Shouldn't be a backup plan either.
We'll read just one more. Teresa said, catering to these folks is what brought more homeless to our state, making the situation worse. I could not agree more. I mean, I could not agree more. And if it didn't bring them into the state, it at least brought them to cities in the state where they felt like, I'm going to get a handout. I'm not going to get a hand up. And all I want in my drug-induced stupor is a handout. All right. Good comments, Nicole. Meh. Everybody loves
me
today. I like them. Hey, you guys, come on. Why has people got to... Not everybody's like this. If I disagree with you on one thing, I just don't like Donald Trump, and all of a sudden it's like, wah!
Don't misrepresent me. It's not like I'm in love with Donald Trump and I'm not out there campaigning for him or anything like that. However, he was very nice to me, and so I...
You did meet him.
I talked to him on the phone. And so I give that a little bit of weight, but also I just think it was good for the country. I think that in terms of policy and how our government was functioning and how our, like, all of the things that a president should be able to do were being done during that time period.
He just needs to shut his mouth.
He just needs to shut up.
Zip it up.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. Stop calling names. Stop saying ridiculous things just to get the attention. Stop all of that.
I'd like somebody to put
fix some, the like, country and walk away, which I actually think there's a chance he would do because he wouldn't be campaigning anymore, that he would just go to work and try to leave it in the best way that his, you know, his legacy could leave it.
It's not within his personality to not say and do some of the things he does.
I hope it's somebody else.
Look, I'll vote for Trump if he agrees for 4 years to wear big gloves, like clown gloves, where he can't use them to tweet, you know? He can't tweet with those. I'll vote for him. Anyway, all right, we got to move on.
We got to get to our closing. Too.
We got to stop the show today because it's out of control. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Coming up today, something we'll be monitoring, the Everett City Council is going to vote on whether to pass an ordinance that allows prosecutors to seek a minimum 30-day jail sentence for repeat offenders. That is according to Como News. We saw this happen in the city of Marysville, and I think that more and more sane cities with sane leaders are going to be looking at ways that they can, you know, dealing with some of these soft-on-crime policies that are in place across the state and even maybe in the counties that they're in, look at ways where they can try to save their city for themselves. And I think this is really good policy to say, if you have individuals who are repeatedly committing assault, theft, public drug use, the types of things that are ruining the quality of life in city centers in particular, then we can put in place a mandatory minimum jail sentence. Not only do you get them off the street, because one offense, if you're theft, one offense in this state, yeah, you're probably not going to jail. You're probably not spending time in jail. And then that releases you right out to the community to continue to do the same thing. You haven't had any sort of repercussion for it. But if you know that, hey, if I'm convicted of these sort of public nuisance crimes two times, three times, four times, five times, the amount of time I'm going to spend in jail increases. So it allows these cities to get those people off the streets. But also, hopefully, let's say they, and again, I come back to drugs. If you're stealing crap from stores, you're probably selling it in a street bazaar to try to get money for your addiction. So it gives them that time out where they're getting punished, the community is being kept safe from them, their crime spree, and hopefully you are helping address the underlying reason why they're committing these sorts of public nuisance crimes. So we will have our eye on what happens in Everett. Everett's not some Republican bastion. Everett's mayor, Cassie Franklin, is not some Republican right-winger. She's a Democrat. She was endorsed by progressive groups. But she is someone who has come around, and I've given her a lot of credit. I've seen her speak at Republican events, even knowing a lot of people in the room would not agree with her politics. She understands that it is not a political issue to try to keep people safe. Public safety cannot be a political hot potato. And I give that woman so much credit for the way that she has led on this issue. Sane. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for making our jobs so fun. What?
Oh, you were going to do a little merch shout out. So I was reminding you.
Oh, Nicole goes over there. She's like, yes. You know what would be a good, I'm going to put my best infomercial face on. Hey, folks. You know what would be a great gift for your best liberal friend? How about a shirt that says Common Sense 2024? We have them available, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We also have mugs, t-shirts, hats, bumper stickers. You know what? Buy a bunch of those bumper stickers and just slap them on cars in downtown. Don't do that. Don't do that. Not without consent. But go check out our merch store, undividedpod.com. You happy, Nicole?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. I'm going to go come down off my caffeine high, get some food ingested. We'll see you guys back on the live show tomorrow at noon. Remember, if you have not signed up to support our show already, please do so. Because, it wouldn't be any fun if we had to stop doing it, right? Just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com.